Everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Glad to have you with us. I'm Kathleen. As always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Dibs.
Hey guys.
This week, we are returning back to the wonderful franchise that is the Owl House for our discussion on season two. We're both very excited because, again, I mean, if you listen to the last episode or if you listen to us just rant about how much we love the show
Oh
in
yeah.
any other episode where we reference it. We're really, really into it, and it was such a fun, cute show,
Oh
and
God, yes.
I'm so sad it's over, but that's part of the reason why we're doing this discussion, because now we know everything, and
True, because everything you
what a
talk about now
journey.
is going to be in hindsight, I feel like, but I know what you're saying. Please continue.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's, like I said, sad that it's over, but now we know the complete story, and it's a hell of a story. So I'm
Oh,
looking
God.
forward to getting into it because I think season two, like we mentioned in the last episode, is a little bit more heavier just in terms of like the amount of stuff that's in the
It
season, but also
packs
like
more of a wallop. Like, it's okay. The best way to say it is that if season one was like an introduction to the world, this literally season two like literally speeds us through the story and punches us in the face with the story, honestly,
Yeah, pretty
in
much.
the best possible way. Not even like, honestly, that's all I can say about this. But let's talk about where we left these characters, right? Because things have turned on their head here a little bit. Ida and Lilith don't have any magic. They are kind of in a weird place with each other, considering they don't know whether or not they can trust each other and whether, I mean, I think Lilith feels like this more than Ida does. Ida's like made peace with it, sort of, but Lilith's like, I did these horrible things in the hopes that I can help my sister, but all that turned out to be a lie, and now I have to make up for it, kind of deal. So there's that with Lilith, and there's so much information. Even with what we saw in season one, there's so much information that we got, like the mindscape and talisman, and how the Bat Queen is a guardian of all these lost talismen. And there's so much with that. And what I love about it is that they expand on that in season two and give us such a wallop with the story that it leaves us wanting more. So let's talk about that, and let's talk about how it just changes from, of course, it's still a fun, hilarious story, but it also deals with such crazy, serious things that you kind of forget that it can be that this was a kid's show. You know, so let's talk about all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of shows that are really good at doing that, where it's very obviously like geared towards a certain demographic, but then the themes and like the stuff they touch on are very much like universal. It's for everybody of any age. It's not just for young kids or preteens or whatever. Like anybody can get something out of the show. So I think the show's definitely like that because it definitely in the beginning starts off like a show that's bright colors and like upbeat and like happy music and all of that. And then partway through, not that it becomes like ultra depressing or anything, but it does get darker. The tone, I think there's like a noticeable shift. The stakes get a lot higher. So I think season two does a good job of kind of like, I guess, in a way, kind of like changing the series without completely overhauling it, but like it, there are, I think, significant like tonal differences and stuff between season one and season two. But I think part of season one's challenge was like establishing the world and like world building and kind of creating all of that. And then also like setting the groundwork for everything that comes later. So by the end of season one, we kind of saw what the stakes were. And then season two just takes those stakes and then just picks them up a notch. So, that part was really interesting to see. But yeah, starting with season two, like at the end of season one, like you said, Lilith and Ida are in like a kind of weird place. They don't have their magic and they're both sharing Ida's curse, which they had never done before. And it's kind of, I think, after all their time sort of being on opposite sides and having that kind of disconnect where Lilith thought she was doing one thing because she wanted to help her sister, and then Ito was kind of like, oh, it's my crazy sister who's like fighting me type thing.
Yeah,
They're kind
exactly.
of at a point where now they live together and they have to kind of figure out how to be sisters again. So that dynamic was really interesting. And then getting to see like the aftermath of the season one finale and all of that play out was also really interesting because like Luz is a kid, but you know, she still feels guilty about her role and maybe kind of setting things into motion a little bit and all of that. So it was interesting to see her kind of take on that sort of responsibility because Ida herself hadn't even really blamed Luz for anything. Like Ida was just trying to protect her. And yeah, Luz was just felt kind of guilty about it. So that was a really interesting kind of dynamic to see.
I do kind of want to talk about that, right? Because it does they do show the after effects because like up until now Ida was like the most powerful witch in the Boiling Isles, say Boiling Isles, save for the Emperor, right? And if she was like I can threaten you, people would believe it. And she was really good at her magic, but now she doesn't have her magic, so now everyone's like taking advantage of that fact, and it's kind of hard to see, really. And I think Luz sees that because they've been having to take tiny bounties across the aisles to make money. And this is, I think, how we get introduced to Hunter, another not Hunter, but the Golden Guard, basically. So let's talk about him because he turns out to be a pretty important character later.
Yeah, I mean, especially considering like where he starts, like when at the start of the season, he's kind of the character that you love to hate because he's just always in like the wrong place at the wrong time. He seems very opportunistic. He's just like, it really at the beginning at least seems like he's out for what he can get. And to a certain extent, I think it's true, but as the season progresses and you get more of his backstory, I think he becomes like I would say definitely more sympathetic. Like you as a viewer rather feel more sympathy for him. And I think that was something that I wasn't initially expecting. And so that was interesting to watch unfold because in the first couple of episodes of season two, he's just like he just keeps popping
There.
up when you don't want him there. And it's just like, oh my God, dude, just go away. They're just trying to like make ends
Live
meet
their
just to let
life.
them get some
Yeah,
money.
exactly. Oh my
And it
God.
seems like he's the type of character who's like got it all and like has everything under control, has what he wants. He's like Bellows's right hand, essentially like out in the field. And so you would think that it's like the greatest position ever. But then again, as the season unfolds and we get more of his backstory, you really start seeing that it's like an illusion, really. It's not like, I mean, he
Oh,
has this role, he
dude,
has
no,
like
you're onto something there. We're gonna talk more about this, but I also want to talk about where this leaves Amity as well, because we kind of know that Amity has been catching feelings for Luz, but this is when Luz starts catching feelings for Amity as well, and it's kind of a nice progression, to be honest. Like it's kind of cutesy and whimsical as well, but it's also like, oh my God, they're being such idiots. Someone help them. Why can't they just communicate? But it's also
know.
nice to see. I mean, it's like it's really sweet, but it's
It is.
and
I
this is
think,
where go ahead, sorry.
no, I was going to say, especially after the last piece of media that you and I watched, and watching our two of our favorite characters just like struggle with just communication for
Oh my
multiple
God.
seasons, so many episodes, and then like you got the payoff at the end for that show, which was great. It was like amazing. It was the best thing ever. But then right after that, to go into this show and then to watch Luz and Amity kind of do the same thing, but like better because they were obviously, you know, communicating at least to a certain extent.
They
It was
weren't
like
there
it was
yet.
cute, yeah. But it's also like just talk, please, just talk. Like 5 minutes together, just like both of you feel the same way, just like I know it's difficult, but like spill your guts, it'll pay off. And it takes a long time for them to get to that point, but when they
Yeah,
do get there,
I wish
the
it
payoff
was
is
that
amazing.
simple, but yeah, I know what you mean for sure, dude. Yeah. And this, it also, I'll also kind of see progressively how horrible Amity's mom is to her. And it's kind of hard to see that too. But I think the season shines so well when it focuses on the little bits, like showing where, giving us clues and hints at all the characters' backstories. And I want to talk about King's backstory a little bit here, because we start to get hints in the beginning of season two, like how Ida found King and how King thinks he's the king of demons. And then there are there from the clues that we see, what I love about how they did this is that there are hints at that possibly being true, but also, like, it can't possibly be true as well, right? So let's talk about that, and let's talk about how it hurts King to know what they find out about him, especially in
Yeah.
this, in the beginning of season two, because that becomes a big plot point for his character growth later on. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like you said, that's one of the really cool things about the season, that even though the stakes are higher compared to the first season, and there is kind of like, when you look at the overall plot, like a finish line that the story is like racing to, this season and even, the previous season and season three, they all kind of have episodes or moments where some of like the background characters are allowed to shine. And by background, I mean like characters who are not as big as like Luz or Amity or Ida or King. Like that, getting to see that was really cool. But with King especially, yeah, I mean, like the first season, like you said, there's kind of crumbs about his backstory, and we get like bits and pieces, but nothing major until season two. And then in season
At the
two, there's a
end
whole
of season
episode.
two. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but even at the beginning of season two, I mean, there's a whole episode dedicated to them going to what they think is King's home and searching for answers. And it starts off kind of like a really lighthearted episode, and by the end we find out kind of like a big revelation for King and even for viewers, that his whole kind of identity is built on a fantasy, because Ida didn't have the heart to kind of tell him, you're not really the king of demons, like it's just something you made up. And
Yeah, I
we're
love
just
Ida
like,
so much. I
yeah,
really love Ida so much. It's just,
I mean, she's
can
so
you blame
wholesome,
her?
but
Can you blame her? Because she
no.
saw this little creature, and she saw this little creature happy, and she was like, you know what? I'm not gonna break your heart. You live your fantasy. You do you, buddy. It was really
Yeah.
sweet.
I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, it's obviously she cares about King, and she cares about him enough to kind of let him have this fantasy, even though I think at this point, by the time he realizes it is just a fantasy, he's kind of like, that kind of shakes him. But I just think it's really sweet that she saw him and decided, like, you know what, I'm gonna raise him and I'm gonna take care of him, and if this is like a coping mechanism, let him have it. Who am I to like destroy
Take
that
that
illusion?
from
And
him,
she,
yeah.
yeah. And it's like, technically, I mean, I don't know what, I don't think Ida would have done this, but I feel like any other mother maybe would have been playing along to a point, and then at a certain point would have been like, okay, you're old enough now, you don't need this fantasy, just drop it, and might have revealed the truth, or just might have, kind of been brutally honest and been like, look, I made up this whole thing and you don't need this as a coping mechanism anymore, so just don't have this fantasy. But Ida's,
Yeah.
I mean, she went along with it for all that time and
For
just kept
about 8
indulging King, because,
years.
like,
Yeah.
yeah, because she's like, she loves him, like that's her baby. And I just think that's so wholesome and sweet, and I don't know,
It's really
something about it is
sweet.
very
No,
sweet.
the bond between Ida and King is really sweet, okay? And this goes back to season one as well, because right in the first episode, she sent Luz on a chase to get King a fake crown. That's how much she loves this little buddy. Like, that's kind of crazy. And it's so funny that they have bets, and Ida's like, you know what? You and I have had a record for bets. You've lost each time. So come on, you really want to do this right now? They have a very hilarious relationship. Okay. But this is when you start to see how caring Ida really is. Because she's like, I'm sorry, I did this because you were happy and I didn't want to take that from you. And I think, in a way, King understood that, and they have a really sweet moment. He's like, boop. And I just like, but you have to promise me, don't, no more secrets. And she's like, yeah, okay, no more secrets. I won't keep secrets from you. But then it's really sweet that she sticks to that and she really takes this seriously. And they do end up finding something really interesting in that castle, that King said was his home. And that turns out to be such a big plot point. Like, I cannot say this enough, and we'll talk more about it later. 'Cause like it turns out to be this huge reveal. But like, oh my God, it's like the craziest thing ever to find out what comes out of that. But then it's just so cool to find out that what he turns out to be, actually. But that's but again, it really showcases how caring Ida is as a person, even though she's put up walls so that she doesn't get hurt and doesn't hurt anyone else. And we'll see more of that too. So there's all of that. And we also see all her relationship with her mother and how Lilith's relationship with her mother has been, which also kind of, although it doesn't excuse what Lilith did, it kind of explains why she did it as well. So let's talk about that too.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, a perpetual like sibling rivalry type thing
Oh
where it's like
God,
you've
yeah.
got two siblings, one always seems to be favored by the parents more than the others, and the other's just kind of like, hello, I exist, I'm here, like, give me some attention. And in most cases, it's probably not that the parents are playing favorites or maybe giving too much attention to one kid, but it can certainly feel that way. So
Exactly. Maybe the parents
it's
don't
hard
think
to,
that, but it does feel that way to the kid. So it's like,
right?
yeah.
Yeah, so it's hard to like blame Lilith for feeling that way, and it's hard to blame her. I mean, again, she was older when she cast the curse on Ida, but she was still a child,
Yeah.
like a teenager. So, you know, teenagers do stupid stuff all the time, and again, it doesn't really excuse what Lilith did, but like you said, this episode kind of explains, or at least gives, I think, the viewers some insight into why Lilith did what she did. And
Oh,
I
yeah.
think the important, like, obviously they can't go back and change what happened in the past, and they can't kind of change all this, you know, like picking sides, and you know, Lilith siding with the Emperor's Coven and trying to use that to help Ida, and Ida just kind of being like a wild witch or whatever you want to call it. But I think the important thing is like they're trying to make amends now, and I think
Yeah.
to use the phrase, Lilith put her money where her mouth is, and you know, said, okay, I'll share part of Ida's curse with her until we can figure out a cure for it. So I think like that part was like nice to see that she wasn't just like offering kind of like useless
No, I
apologies and
agree.
wasn't just like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do it. She's like, I am sorry, and to prove how sorry I am, I'll
This
share
is what
half the
I'm gonna
curse with
do.
you.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely agree. But then but Gwendolyn also has a clue for Luce. And I actually want to talk about this episode a little bit more because it starts with a flashback because Gwendolyn's desperate to cure her child of this curse. She sees what it does to her daughter. She sees that her daughter is not okay, and that every time this curse takes hold, it really is hurting her daughter, and she doesn't want that. And it shows the kind of lengths that Gwendolyn would go to help her daughter. And it also shows that in her desperation, she pushed her daughter away as well. So this is when we kind of get a slight clue about how Ida found the portal anyway. Which I want to talk about because let's talk about that a little bit because that's always been a mystery. First of all, Bellows wants that portal door. How did Ida have it? Like, how did that come to be in her possession in the first place? And this is where we see a glimpse of that. But if that's the case, how did it turn out to be buried in her backyard? That's another thing that we need to talk about. There's so much going on here that I think the show tries to answer, but it's really cool how they drop all these hints, and I really like how they put it all together in this season. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I mean, it is like I think the like again, like the show had a lot to accomplish over 3 seasons, and then also, the third season ended up being what it was, and it was, cut because of politics or whatever you want to call it.
Whatever you want to call that, yeah.
So yeah, that part is obviously unfortunate, but I think given the time the show had, I think it really can't talk. I think it did a really good job at like
Absolutely.
telling the story that the writers and the creators intended to
Wanted to
tell, and
tell,
then
yeah.
doing it in a way that didn't feel super rushed until maybe season three. Like even season three, I think just given the time they had, I think they did the best
They
they
did it
could.
the best that they could. Yeah,
But
I agree.
yeah, season three, I think if any season is a little bit if any season kind of shows that they were running out of time and trying to
It will be season three.
like yeah,
I
season
would
three, I
have
think
to
you
say
can,
it's season three. And
yeah,
we'll
I think
talk
you can
more
feel
about
it
that.
a little bit more in season two. But yeah, I mean, again, like this is like one of those episodes where it seems kind of lighthearted and it seems kind of like low stakes, but the reveal at the end, like you said, is a pretty big reveal because we find out through Gwendolyn that Luz is not the first human in the
First
boiling
human
aisle.
to come to
Yeah.
the boiling aisles.
So
Yes.
if there have been others.
Which becomes such a big plot point, like such a huge plot point. And we'll talk more about that for sure. Because oh my God. So basically what we find out is that there was another human named Philip Wedderbane that had come to the Boiling Isles by accident, and he left his diary in like or he kept a journal of sorts, and Gwendolyn had heard the story from her great great grandmother or something. She heard it from an ancestor of hers, basically. Now that one bit of information is important, and we'll talk about that theory later when we find out more about Philip Wedderbane and all that stuff, because that's an interesting storyline altogether. But I also want to talk about Gus and how he is such a stellar character that he's a pretty powerful illusionist. Like he can, like honestly, pretty skilled. I would say he's a prodigy, to be honest. But like, and this episode where they're looking for Philip Wedderbane's diary ends up showcasing that, and also builds on Amity and Luce's growing crush, which I find adorable and cute and silly and makes me want to pull my hair out because I just wanted to communicate and deal with this. But of course, they're not gonna because they're kids and they're still dealing with feelings. So let's talk about all of that.
Yeah, I mean, where do you even start with that? Gus is like, I feel like there's a lot of connections we could make between Gus and another character, but I'm not going to open that can of worms because we're
Hey!
just going to be talking about that forever. Like, that could be its own
I know
podcast
what you
series.
mean. I know what you
So
mean.
I'm not going to get into
No.
that. But I mean, there's just something really wholesome about Gus and Willow and like all of this
Their
kind of
friendship.
student,
Yeah.
yeah, that like Lou surrounds herself with, because even Amity, who was kind of frosty the first few interactions she had with Luce, I think Luce is just like one of those characters who's like, she just wants to be friends with everybody. Even if you're like the school bully type kid, her first instinct is to like make friends, and then it's only when you cross a line or do something that's like really
Dumb.
mean, or
Yeah.
yeah, that she's like, you know what, screw it, we're not playing around anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think what's so cool is that like Willow and Gus, I think, spent a lot of the time kind of trying to encourage Luz, and I think she does the same for them too.
Oh,
But
yeah.
because season one has spent so much time kind of building the world, setting the stage for everything else to come, there wasn't a ton of time to kind of focus on some of the side characters as much in season one.
Yeah,
And that's not to say season one didn't. I think it just didn't devote as much time as
Oh
season
yeah,
two
for
like
sure,
did.
for sure.
So episodes like Through the Looking Glass Runes and stuff like that are like very like side character heavy, in the sense like Through the Looking Glass Runes focuses like mostly on Gus,
Yes, yeah.
and his kind of journey, and his, I guess, relationship with his abilities to a certain extent and stuff like that. So getting to see that, getting to see what he's able to do when he's not afraid or like worried about how he's doing it and stuff like that. Like that was really cool, because I mean, he's, like you said, he's very powerful, he's very skilled, and he might be a prodigy, but you don't get to see him use that so much until season two. Because in season one, it's like he knows what he's doing, but he doesn't really have a need to like,
I agree.
demonstrate his skills
Yeah,
in that way. So
I agree.
season two kind of gives
He
all these characters,
shines. Yeah.
and it's really nice to see that, because it's not just like one or two characters, like everybody gets a chance in the spotlight. It's just
Oh
a
my
matter of
God,
like
yes.
when, because there's so many characters the show has to like balance, and so
I
many things
definitely
it's trying to
agree with
accomplish.
that.
But
No, you're
yeah.
absolutely right about that. But I want to talk about Amity and how she's struggling with what she's feeling, and how she, and I like how it was depicted too, because like it's so good to see stuff like this in a kid's cartoon, because then kids will look at, watch this and think, hey, okay, it's okay for me to feel like this. It's okay for me to ask myself these questions and probably talk to somebody about it too, because I like that. Because she literally says, ever since I met Luz, I'm doing things I never thought I'd do, and I'm feeling things I didn't think I could feel. I don't know what to do about this. And that's an interesting predicament for any kid to be in. And I mean, of course, like I said, I feel like it's so good for kids to see this in a positive light and say, okay, if I'm feeling something like this, that's okay, but I need to talk to myself or talk to someone about it to, resolve what's going on and see what's happening until it reaches a tipping point and stuff like that. What do you think of that?
No, I absolutely agree. I think it's, especially in today's day and age, I feel like it's kind of silly that it's still taking so long for us to kind
Yeah.
of show this on any sort of platform. Just because, that like that sort of media obviously didn't really exist when we were kids. Like if it
No.
existed, it was like very hush hush. People didn't really talk about it, or you had to like, there were very
Layers and
specific
layers of
ways of,
subtext, basically.
yeah, or like
That
even
too.
for the ones that were maybe more explicit, there was probably like a very specific way of getting access to those things
Yeah.
that is probably not needed now. And like now there's so much more focus on like representation and all of that. And so like
Which
that's really
is
nice to
great,
see. But
yeah.
yeah, it's still, to me, I'm always kind of baffled that it's like, 21st century and we're still like fighting over, who people can be attracted to it and stuff like that. And so I
That's
think like
just
this
so
was so
dumb, but
refreshing.
yeah, I
Yeah,
agree.
well, that's what made this one really, like this show really nice, is that like there is none of that like, oh, is it an issue that I'm attracted to this person or that person or whatever. It's just like it is what it is, and like
It is
the
what it is,
attraction is
and
like
it's
nobody
okay to
questions the
que
attraction.
No, it's okay to
But
question yourself. It's okay to, ask yourself this question and think, is this what this is?
right.
That's always.
Yeah, but I think like there's no, at least in this show, there's none of like
No, I
the
agree.
like is it okay that I'm attracted to somebody
No,
of this
I
gender or
absolutely
like
agree.
type
Yeah,
or
yeah.
whatever? Because it like I don't think there was ever a point where like Lucy
No.
like looking at like a specific type of like being and was like,
No.
is it okay that I'm attracted to like
Yeah,
I don't
you're right.
know like a very specific type of like mythical creature versus like being attracted to like a witch or wizard or whatever.
Yeah,
It was
exactly.
just like I think they might have questioned like their feelings and their attraction to another character, but not so much because they were a specific like
Yes.
type of character or like a specific, sex, gender, whatever. But yeah, I mean, it was just really nice to see that there was like none of that. Like, is it weird that I'm attracted to a girl, or is it weird that I'm
No,
not
not that at
attracted
all. Yeah,
to a
exactly. It's
girl and
just,
stuff like that? It just was, and that was really nice
yeah.
because nobody ever like in the show, it's not like the
It's not something
attraction
you had to
itself.
question. It's just something that you
Yeah.
ask yourself to find out what you're feeling, which I
Yeah.
appreciate. That's good.
Yeah.
And I
It was
like
just like,
how, yeah, of course. But what I did find funny is that they did find Philip's diary, but they also found the diary eaten by an Echo Mouse. But that's something that they didn't expect. But I also like Luce's first reaction to the Echo Mouse, and then what she does with the Echo Mouse once Amity tells her what that Echo Mouse can do. And we're gonna talk about that.
yeah, I mean that reveal with the Echo Mouse is actually really cool because it seems like the episode should end on a cliffhanger, which in a way I guess it kind of does.
Kind of.
But Amity is, I mean, she works at the library. She's very knowledgeable about the stuff, so she tells Luz that the Echo Mouse can actually repeat or play back, whatever it's eaten. So even though it's eaten part of Philip's
Most
diary,
of Philip's diary.
yeah, actually most of it. They still have a way of accessing its contents, and so there's it's kind of like the I want to say obligatory pet episode because I feel like not every episode in every show ends up with the main character getting a pet, but there are a lot of shows where the main character ends up with like an animal companion, and for a bit, the Echo Mouse is Lucy's companion, so getting to see that is really cool. Also, I just want to say really quickly, the design for the Echo Mouse is really cute.
It
I
is
want a mini
cute.
plushie.
Ah.
And in a weird way, it reminds me of a character from a completely different franchise. But if anybody's, because I'm very into Critical Role right now, that's my thing. There's a character in Campaign 3 that is a dead rat. And every
Oh.
time I see him, even though there's like official art for him, every time I see him, I think of the Echo Mouse. So I don't know what that's, take from that what you will, but
I
putting
want to
that
talk
out
about
there.
the very last scene of this this episode actually, because when Amity tells Luce about the Echo Mouse, Luce is like, "All right, I hope we can be good friends," is what she tells the Echo Mouse. And then Amity is just like staring at Luz because she's already caught feelings and she doesn't know what to do with them. She's like, "Don't worry, you always have a way of sneaking into people's hearts." And she gives her a kiss on the cheek. And it's so
It's really
cute.
cute. Also,
They should get their act together. Okay, it's
I
just.
know, I know. I just want to point out too that like there's a whole thing because Lucy's trying to get into like the restricted section of the
Yeah.
library and she's like enlists Amity's help. Amity ends up losing her job and then like Luz immediately jumps
Yeah.
through hoops to get it back.
Get it
And
back.
then like there's a really cute scene where she's just like giving Amity her library card back and she's like, I got you your job back.
But if you never want to see me again, I understand. I'm sorry. But it's like.
I know. It's a really sweet scene. Like the last bit where they're like kind of, like confronting each other after the craziness of this episode. It's super sweet and wholesome. Also, Amity with purple hair, hell yes. Like get rid of the green dye job.
Beautiful.
It's like, I know, it looks so much better on her. And it's so depressing when you think about how much her mom has tried to control her and how I guess willingly, well, maybe not willingly, but Amity's gone with it for a huge chunk of time. So it's like, it's kind of depressing when you think about how much time she lost out on just because her mom was so controlling and overbearing and a piece
Yep.
of work.
Oh yeah, a piece of work is putting it lightly, Odalia. But yeah, I know what you
know
mean.
she's a really, like, it's concerning that she's got three kids and she's trying to raise all of them.
I know. But yeah, it's just, I love that episode so much. I love that scene so much. And I'm just like, dude, get your act together and just tell each other already. You're both catching feelings. It's fine. It's cute as hell. But just talk to each other already. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, it's cute. Don't get me wrong. I love it. It's great. It's great fodder to watch. Like it really is. But it's also so frustrating because you're like, dude, if you just talked and properly communicated, you'd be together already, which is like, come on. Like, you know,
Yeah.
it's just
It's frustrating because I think when you care about characters so much, like you want them to be happy. And in some cases, it's like watching them go through an entire series sometimes, just denying themselves the things they
I know
want.
exactly what you're talking about.
Know, it's just, it's
Girl.
frustrating. It makes you want to like pull your hair out, like you said.
Yeah.
But to lose them is
I
crazy
know
sometimes.
exactly what you're talking about. Oh my God. Don't get me like this.
It's multiple things, honestly. I mean, yeah, it's just, it's.
Yeah, I know. But I really like this because b this starts the Echo Mouse kind of helps Luce on her journey with Philip's diary, and it also kind of helps Amity understand herself better and what she wants out of her own life better as well. So I kind of appreciate that for both of them, actually. I think again, this season has so much going on, and there's a lot of progression here because up until now, all we know is that Palistrum wood, which is the wood that people used in the Boiling Ice to make talisman, has gone scarce, right? That's what we know. And we'll find out more about why, and it's kind of sinister. I will tell you, it's really sinister because it's kind of sickening, to be honest with you. It's just and this is when it and in this episode, in the next episode, we kind of see how important talismans are to witches in the Boiling Isles, especially for someone who's a loving, caring person to their palisman, like Ida is with Albert. And it's like, it kind of, it tells you the kind of bond that you can form with a palisman. And I want to talk about that. And I also want to talk about how stupid Kikimora is. And I also want to talk about Hunter and his character progression, because this episode begins a slight change for him. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, for Hunter especially, like there's a lot of transformation. Season two is a pretty big season. I mean, it's also it's a kind of introductory season in a way, because he doesn't have a lot of time to really like shine in season one.
Oh, yeah.
But in season two, yeah, I mean, there's like a lot of stuff just kind of like dedicated to him, and Hunting Palisman is kind of like one of those episodes because we learn that he is the Emperor's nephew, like his right-hand man, whose like goal is just to help Bella with like everything. And he Bella's is suffering from some sort of like unidentified illness, or it's like an unknown illness, at least to the viewers. And so he needs Palisman to like, I guess, heal himself or temporarily stave it off or whatever the case is, which is, yeah, really depressing when you think about it, because palisman are like, I mean, essentially
Lifelong
almost like living,
companions.
yeah, but it's also like they're living beings to a certain
They
extent, right? So it's
are.
like he's basically just like going around murdering these beings just because he thinks that's his cure and it's helped for so long. Why should he stop now? And so he tasks Hunter with collecting a bunch of talisman and getting it back to him. And what better place to do that than Hexside, where it's Palamon Pairing Day, and there's just Palamon galore and lots of like, I don't know, like you said, it is kind of like sinister when you think about it, that like there's a school with all these like young kids who are looking to make a companion and have this lifelong connection with this being that's going to be like one of their best friends for life,
Oh
and
yeah,
then
exactly.
enter a golden guard who's here to steal all the talisman and rob the kids of like a friend, a companion, a familiar, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, the episode starts fairly sinister. But partway through, like once, you know, Hunter's kind of round up all the talisman and, you know, gotten as many as he could off to Bellows, he ends up taking Luce with him as well.
I
And
want to talk about that because there's a lot of important stuff going on in this episode, right? Because number one, yes, it's Palamon Adoption Day because Bump, along with Eeta and the Bat Queen, have basically arranged for Palamon Adoption Day because the Bat Queen knows, because the Bat Queen has been the guardian of these lost Palamon in her forest for like a very long time. And she basically arranges for this with Eeta and Bump. And it's really sweet to see these kids make a connection with them. But the problem is, Luce, unfortunately, is unable to forge a connection with any of these talismen. And she feels terrible about it because her reasoning is, I came here to be a witch, and I thought that if I did that would make sense. But then her reasoning is also like, but I didn't think far enough. Am I still going to be a witch if I go back to the human realm? Can I even do magic there? There's a lot of doubts. And I love how Eeta and King think about this. And Eeta's just like, I gotta do something for this kid. She can't feel down on herself. It's not right. But there's one talisman that does come back with her. And this talisman becomes so important to the rest of the story. It's heartbreaking, literally heartbreaking, because, you beautiful bird, you're
I
wonderful,
know.
and I love you. But let's talk about this bird and how this bird forces so much of a change in Hunter that it's incredible. Like, let's talk about
Yeah.
that.
I mean, also, like, that's one of the things that we didn't mention because, you know, we know, but, you know, in this is the first episode when we watched it live the first time. This is the first episode where we learned the Golden Guard's name is Hunter, and he had been posing as Caleb, but that's not his real name, and all of that. So, like, that in itself was like a huge thing, but even, you know, felt like he had to reveal it, or that he did reveal it, whatever, however you want to look at it. But it was also really interesting because up until now he's kind of been like, Bellows is right, whatever Bellows needs I have to do because he's my uncle, like that's my role, that's my duty, whatever. And now all of a sudden having this conversation with Luce, seeing the talismans, all of that, she's able to kind of convince him that this isn't something he should be doing. And the two of them, even though they're not on the same side just yet, they have a common enemy when Kimura pops up and is like trying to
Upstage Hunter.
derail. Yeah. So
And
it's kind of like,
it's a sibling banter with these two idiots. Like, I hate it, but I also love it, you know?
yeah, no, really, it really is. But it's also just like, you know, it's that thing where it's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend type thing. It's really like, even though they're not quite on the same side, it's really nice to see that like they were working together this episode, especially to save the talisman. And then it ends up, like you said, being such a huge thing because at the end of the episode, one of the talismans they saved ends up kind of going with Hunter, even though he's never had any like magical tendencies, or he's kind of been a little bit like loose in that sense, where it's like any sort of ability he might have had, it wasn't necessarily 100% natural, if that makes any sense.
It was
But
because of his staff, basically. But
yeah.
yeah, I agree.
And so Yeah, it would be nice to kind of see them bonding over that. But yeah, Flapjack is a cardinal talisman that ends up kind of running away with Hunter. And Luz gets pallets from wood from Ida and King so that she can
Which
make
is
her own
so
talisman.
sweet because I love how they reveal it too. She's like, she just drops that hunk of wood in front of Luz, and Luz is just like, thanks. It's Palestra wood, you ding dong. Like, oh my God, what? Basically, they robbed the Bonesboro Garden Society. They robbed.
I mean,
I mean,
really
can you
hard
blame
not
them?
to.
I don't blame them, but it's also just hilarious how they reveal it. I love how King is like, we could have used the door.
Mean, he has a point, but
What?
I'm sure Ida's way was much more fun than entertaining.
I know. I just love them. Again, this shows how loving Ida really is, even though she's put up walls. You know how much she cares and how much she loves these two. It's just ridiculously stupid, okay? And it
Yeah, it's also
becomes.
like a found family trope, which is
Oh,
if it's
God.
done right, it's so good.
So
And I think
good.
this show does like a really good job with
Oh,
it.
my
Like,
God. For
it just,
sure.
I mean, obviously, Ida is not Luke's biological mom, but she's so good with Luke. And it's like, it gets
She's
to a
very
point
much like a
where,
maternal figure. I,
yeah, I
for
mean,
sure.
considering where they started, like at the beginning of the show, when it was just like, initially, Ida was like, not wary of Luke, but she's like, I don't really need another thing to look after. It's not really my problem, but like I'll entertain her for a little bit. And then it turns into like this huge epic thing where like by the end she's like, that's my daughter, even
That's
if
my
she's
baby.
not like biologically
That's my
mine, like
baby.
we're still family. Yeah.
He basically
And
enrolls
so
her, does things to get her enrolled in Hexside. She does things to basically protect her, you know, makes her a witch's cape and everything. Like, dude, that's a mom thing to do. Don't lie to yourself, please. I mean, come on. But the next episode, oh my God, I love this next episode because it's so good at one, representation, two, showcasing the kind of idiot Ida is, three, showcasing the kind of idiots Luz and King are. Everything, all of this. So, like, and we get an introduction to a brand new character, which is amazing. So let's talk about Rain Whispers. Let's talk about Ida's connection with Rain Whispers. And let's talk about the whole situation that Luz and King find themselves in and King's big reveal for Ida. So let's talk about all of that because there's so much going on here.
Yeah, I mean, Ethan's Requiem was like a phenomenal. I mean, they're all
Yes.
phenomenal episodes, really. Like, I don't think there's a single bad episode in terms of like
No, I agree.
writing. There might be bad
For
episodes in
sure.
terms of like the events that happen,
Yeah.
but not bad in
And
terms of like
because they
quality.
hurt us, not because the events in itself were like terribly done or anything like that, for
Yeah,
sure.
exactly. Yeah, it's not like the quality of the show is just bad in terms of like how. Like the events in the story that are unfolding and like the characters having to go through them. Like in that respect, it's best. But the actual show itself, quality, everything is great. But yeah, I mean, Rain was such a cool addition. And also because it kind of, there's not a lot of like hints before they're introduced. They're just kind of like
I
there
agree.
in that episode. And then as the episode progresses, you get the backstory and you find out that like Ida and Rain were classmates. They were
And they
also a
were
little bit more
also
than
a
classmates.
thing. They were a
Yeah,
thing.
they were a thing. And it's just also again, like we said earlier with Luz and Amity, it was just really nice to see representation just like done in a way where it's like there's no
Also, Rain is
fuss about it.
non-binary, which is again amazing stuff. Also voiced by a non-binary character. Again, great stuff. So let's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just again, it's just nice to see that like there's no fuss around it, right? Like the characters in the story are just like, okay,
There,
I'm
they
attracted to,
exist.
yeah,
Yeah, that's it,
like
which
I
is
like this
nice.
person or I like this thing, whatever it, like it is what it is, and then we just move on. And yeah, I don't know, there's just something really sweet about Ida and Rain and their relationship. Partly because I think when they were young, they were just so chaotic. And they were just like, I mean, Ida alone is like a wild card. You can never predict what she's gonna do. But like mix Rain with that, and
Oh
just
my
like
God. If you
they're
think
just
Ida was
perfect.
wild, Rain is wilder. Okay, like I cannot explain to you how crazy these two are as a duo. And we'll get to that too, because we get to know more about these two as the season progresses. But oh my God, so chaotic. I hate them, and they've ruined my life, and I hate them. But yeah, go ahead, because
No, I
again.
mean, I was just gonna say, like, it was so nice to see that, because I think also, like, a lot of Ida's time and energy now at the current stage of her life is just kind of devoted to, like, Luce and King and Hootie and, like, Owl House and her sister and
Dealing with
all
the
that. Like,
curse. Yeah,
she's
exactly.
doing all these things for, like, other people,
Yep.
not at the, like, detriment to herself, of course, because, the curse, but she doesn't really have, or, like, she hasn't really done anything that's, like, kind of just for her, and going after Rain now, again, is kind of, like, her one
After
thing.
all these years, eh?
I
Think,
could make
you
an
know what
Uber,
this
but I'm not going
reminds me
to.
of? This reminds me of an Odyssey quest line, "All flames burn brighter." This is that. This is pretty much that for Ida. But to give this context, because this starts out as a light-hearted episode but turns really heavy. Because in the beginning of this episode, Luce and King are like training for some sort of thing, and Ida's just gotten used to the fact that there are other people in their house that she really, really cares about. And she's had a list of things to do. I love how she's like, check itchy boy for King. Like,
Yeah.
come on, man. But she overhears something which makes her think that King wants to leave, right? And King is like, I don't know how she's gonna take this. Don't tell her already. I'll tell her. I want to be prepared to tell her. And then she thinks he wants to leave, and she's like putting it out because she doesn't want him to leave. And it's like heartbreaking because she's finally found people that she really cares for, and then they want to leave. It's kind of like harsh, you know what I'm saying? It hurts. It hurts. And this is when she meets Rain again, and Rain is again, there's a duality to Rain here, right? Because they've become the head witch of the Bard Coven, but they're also an anarchist, and they've basically teamed up with a bunch of other witches to form the Bards Against the Throne, basically causing chaos
No,
against
it's
the
isn't
Emperor's regime,
it? Yeah,
which is how
it's I think Coven Against the Throne, right?
Covens
Because
against
initially it
the
was
Coven. No,
bats.
that's later. Initially, it's the bat, so Bards Against the
Oh
Throne.
yeah, no, yeah, you're right. That comes later. Okay.
Yeah, so
I'm just kidding.
that's how Ida meets them again, and that's and in the beginning, it's just that Rain's just like, dude, you're messing things up. I can't do this. But then later, they're like, Ida, you're embarrassing me in front of my crew. Stop doing that. But then it's as if no time has passed. They're being flirty. They're being idiotic with each other still. It's just the sweetest thing. It makes you want to pull your hair out, but it's also like, dude, just get your act together, okay? So let's talk about that, because that turns really serious, right? The whole thing with King's Luce and King training is that they're entering a competition which allows them to, have a media spotlight so that King can send a message to his parent or dad, wherever, so that they'll find out where King is and come find King, basically. But in the midst of all this, you have Rain and Ida tracking down, taking down the Emperor's coven wherever they can, but then they almost fall into a trap. But this one scene, it's I cannot tell you, because the first time I watched it, my jaw dropped, because not only is the animation spectacular, but the music for Ida's Requiem is just one of the most beautiful tracks in this show. Like, I can't even imagine.
I
I
know, it
can't. Let's talk
really
about
is.
that.
It's gorgeous. I mean, I had that song on for like a solid day, just like nonstop, just like loop,
Right?
because it was
It's
so
been
good.
on repeat. Oh my God, such a good track. Oh my God. It's like, it's so cool because you've seen Ida play the tune by herself, but then mixed with Rain's instrument, it is so beautiful. That track is like, oh my God, it gave me chills every time I heard it. Like, literally, it's so good. But then this is where things turn really hairy. Because it turns out that Hedwig is the Hedwig of the Abomination Coven and the Beast Coven, Darius and Eberwolf. They're the ones who've set a trap for these guys. And Ida, in the process of doing like playing this tune, is basically, affecting herself because her curse is warping that magic. And I love how Rain sees that Ida's sacrificing herself, and she's like, and they're like, don't do this to yourself. Don't run from, I don't know what you're running from, but don't give up so easily. They need you more than you know. So it's I like that moment a lot. What did you think of that? Because it says so much about Rain, and says so much about what Ida's feeling as well. So there's a lot going on
Yeah,
with
I
this, so let's
mean,
talk about that.
I know there's something again really wholesome about like even though Ida and Rain have been apart for a while now, obviously their feelings for each other haven't changed.
Dulled,
I
yeah.
think, yeah, the only difference now is that Ida has quote unquote kids in Luth and King, so she can't really just, it's not as simple as just deciding, I want to do something for my significant other or my ex or whatever you want to call it. She has to think about Luth and King and the consequences of anything she might do, because like now she's playing surrogate mom to a human and a
These two
titan.
things, yeah.
but
Human and king, yes,
yeah
exactly. You're right.
but it's just like I don't know, there's just something really hopeful about like seeing them kind of reconnect and then seeing their story through kind of both of their perspectives in this episode a little bit. And then, yeah, there's like that really beautiful moment where, like, even though I think Rain realizes what Ida is doing and maybe even to a certain extent knows why Ida would want to do that, they're like you said, telling Ida, like, don't kind of sacrifice yourself now because you've got, Luth and King. If we're gonna do anything, now is not the time to do it. So, Rain kind of forces Ida to go back and help Luth and King, and then kind of, I don't want to say necessarily takes a fall for her, but they definitely take something for her.
Oh God, yes, because Darius and Eberwolf take them away. And you see Kikimora coming in there and basically do something to Rain, and that's how this episode kind of gets heavy. And the last bit makes me cry so much because Ida does go back to Lucent King's race, and she's happy for she basically does something so sweet for them, even though she knows what this means. But I love King's message. But I love King's message and how he phrases it, to be honest, because Ida's like, don't worry, even if you don't, if even if you didn't come first and get to broadcast your message, everything's on streaming now. It's like a dig at I think Dana did this as a dig at regular TV programming. I don't know. It's funny to see that they did that. But I love how Ida's such an idiot, okay? And I love her so much for it because she's basically like, you know what? Screw it. You're gonna get this message out regardless. I'm gonna stream it for you on my Pentagram. We're gonna do a live video. Everyone's gonna be able to see this, so do it. And it's so sweet that and King is just like, hi. And he describes himself and he says, I like this and like that. And if this is, I just want to know if you like the same thing. But up until now, I've been raised by a cranky old witch. And Ida's just like, hey, come on. Like, but cranky or not, she's the one who raised me. And that's why I want to legally change my name to King Clotho.
I know. It was so wholesome. Kind
It
of unexpected
was.
too, because I think the first time you watch it, you're definitely expecting King to go through with his original plan, which was trying to
Leave.
broadcast a message to his dad. And yeah, that too. But as the episode unfolds, and especially once you get to this point, it's like he's not changed. I mean, he's not leaving. He just wanted to like
Legally
formally have
change his
himself
name.
adopted.
It's
Yeah, so it's really sweet.
really sweet.
It's such a cute thing, and so like
It's awesome.
yeah, for lack of a better term, been using that term a lot, but it's true.
So now he's King Clawthorn, everybody. And that is the sweetest thing ever. That's all I can say about that. But the next episode, oh my God, I was not expecting this episode to be such a banger. Okay, like I have to say, I love the play on words here. Like it's just a play on knock knock knocking on heaven's door by Guns N' Roses, and it just says knock knock knocking on Hootie's door, which is like, okay, great play on words, guys. Like I appreciate all of that, I really do, but like honestly. I thought this was going to be a fun Hootie episode, but the way this like smacked me in the feels, I will not be able to tell you. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, the episode is basically just like Hootie trying to do a bunch of things to like help the occupants of the Owl House.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like he's doing it with the best intentions. The degree of success he has for each person varies. For some, he's more successful than others. But yeah, I mean, it just like yeah, it's like one of those episodes where it's really like you think it's not going to be super deep and heavy. And then you get like through the episode and it's like, yeah, there was lightness. Yeah, there was a lot of deep and heavy stuff too. And they kind of balance each other out. But like at the end of the episode, like you said, you would think it would just be like almost like a filler episode or not really like an
Yeah,
episode that would make you
but
feel all these intense emotions and stuff.
oh.
But
God.
yeah.
Okay, let's talk about this, right? Because there's three things that very three very important things that happen. King trying to figure out what's going on with him, who he is, what kind of creature he is. Ida trying to basically cope with Rain being taken and trying to do something to be useful again. Luz trying to contend with her feelings for Amity. Good Lord. That's a
Yeah,
lot.
and then Hootie bless him, thinking I can fix all of them.
But okay, so let's go over these one by one, right? King is growing up a little. He wants to know who he is, where he comes from, what kind of creature he is. And again, Dana, props to you for basically, keeping this hidden for as long as you possibly could. They even had a blood sample for King, and we didn't even suspect what he truly is up until much later in the season, to be honest with you, right? It blows my mind still. But the cool thing is, we do find out that King has a new power, like Sonic Boom power kind of thing, which is like really cool, by the way. And then with Ida, I really love, I don't know if I should call this therapeutic or cathartic, but I love how she makes peace with the Owl Beast in this episode. And the result is fantastic. So let's talk about that. Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways, I think it is a cathartic experience for her because obviously she's been living with this curse for a very long time. And, you know, she's been able to sort of deal with it as best as she could at times, maybe use it to her advantage when she needs to. But I don't know that she ever kind of made peace with it the way she did in this episode, where it's kind of like accepting that, okay, you know what, maybe this thing is a part of me. And that's not
I need
necessarily a
to
bad
accept
thing.
it. Yes,
Yeah,
exactly.
like it sucks that she got cursed and she absolutely didn't deserve it. But, you know, she's been surviving this long and like she's accomplished so much both with it and like by trying to like kind of suppress it that it's like it's maybe not the, you know, burden that she necessarily thought it was
Thought
in the
it
past.
was.
So it was nice to kind of see her reach that kind of place. But I think what's cooler too is like once she kind of comes to that understanding, it's almost like she has her own like physical transformation. Like her owl form just it becomes more harpy like and slightly less owlish, which kind of missed. But her new form is really cool too.
Oh my
So it's
God,
nice to see her
Harpy
kind of
Ida
get
is a
like,
mood. It is a mood. Like, oh my God.
I know.
Wonderful. Absolutely. And I love that she got to that point, which is great for her. I love that for her. Yes, Ida. It sucks that it happened to you. It sucks that this was done to you, but you are much more than that. You are much more than that, and you can deal with this and you can come out of this much better. That's just, I love that message. Like, you know, it doesn't have to define you. Yes, it sucks that it happened, but it doesn't have to define you. But oh my God, I want to talk about how cheesy, how fucking cheesy Hootie is when it comes to Loose and Amity. Okay, it is the most cheesy, stupid thing, but also cute. He literally makes a tunnel of love for these two idiots. And
You know
it.
what that reminded me of when I saw that
Tell
episode for the
us.
first time? In the Lightning Thief, there's a bit where they go to a water park, and
Yes!
Percy and Annabeth are on
Yes!
the thrill of a ride of love. And I always think of like there's that bit in the beginning where they're
I'm not
trying to get
going with
into
you.
the
What are
ride, and yeah,
you
Annabeth is just like, under no circumstance am
doing?
I getting into that ride with you. And then it's like immediately like the next portion of the chapter is like, and Annabeth's on the ride with Percy. And so yeah, when I saw this episode, like the whole tunnel of love thing, and I
You
was
know
like,
what
oh,
I
it's
would
like
tell
Percy Jackson.
Annabeth? You know what I would tell Annabeth? You sweet summer child, wait a couple of years.
Not even a couple of years. I mean, it's a quick thing from like I can barely stand him to like, oh my God, that is my future husband.
Idiots, idiots in the best way, I'm telling you. I'm telling you. But I love how this episode kind of ends with them admitting to each other that they actually like each other after a lot of mishaps. But I also love how Luce is like, Hootie's like upset because he thought he couldn't help anybody. But Ida, and then Ida's just like, she's asking Luce, what did Hootie want to help you with? Tell me so that at least we can convince him that he helped you. I wanted to ask Amity out. And then I love how Ida says that she's like, whoa, do you really want to? Like, that is so cool, right? That's like, okay, right, great, but do you really want to do this? And that's how it turns out. And I love that they end up confessing to each other. It's really sweet. And then they're like, yeah, we want to go out with each other. So we're going to start something really sweet and cool. I loved it. It's super cute. And it's really sweet. And I agree with Hootie when he says, They're the best and they deserve all the happiness. But yeah, I love it. Yes, they do. They're
Yeah, no, they're
wonderful.
absolutely adorable.
Yes, they are. And I love how they're trying to figure out Philip's diary together at this point with the Echo Mouse's help, which again is so cool. I really love it. And again, this is when things get really interesting because again, this show has been really good with dropping hints at future plot points, and I think the next episode is very good at doing that because the first thing we see in the frame of the first episode is something about Grimwalkers because Bellos is reading something about Grimwalkers and Hunter walks in to the frame. And this is the first time you see Bellos's face, and you see that it's like all scarred up and it's weird and all those things. And we don't know why that's the case. Spoiler, we find out later, but that's for a later time. But yeah, this is where Hunter starts to feel the pressure of displeasing what displeasing his uncle looks like. And what it feels like for Hunter to basically feel like he's not that Bellos ha no longer will no longer have any use for him, and that makes him feel like it makes him fear his position with Bellos, which is really not a good position to be in. That's number one. Number two, Luz has the common mold, which is a hilarious situation. But then they found a clue, an interesting clue, to making a new portal, which is Titan's blood. Let's talk about that because that turns out to be an interesting plot point later. So please take it away.
Yeah, I mean, one, it was kind of cool to see that this is one of the first episodes where like Luz was not entirely out of the picture, but because she was, recovering from the common mold, she obviously can't travel and go to these places at the moment. So this is the first episode where it's Ida, Amity, and King without Luz. And it's not really that episode, but I was kind of like watching it, I was kind of thinking that it's like the sort of trope of like meeting the future in-laws type thing. It was like Amity's like not her first time meeting Ida, but like the first time she was like properly being
Interacting with
alone with her.
them, yeah.
Well, not even that, like she was alone with Ida, like Luz just wasn't there, so it's like, this is my girlfriend's mom, how is she gonna react type thing. But it was also like really cool to see them like be able to work together in spite of Luz being, temporarily out of the picture. So that part was really cool. But then yeah, Hunter being kind of in that position of having to prove his worth, not a great position.
Oh,
And at
yeah.
least for like a portion of his, story, he reminded me a lot of another character in another
I
franchise that I keep referencing but won't name. Just because if we start talking about it, I watched that stuff, so I'm not gonna name
know. I know exactly who you're talking about.
it. One of these days we'll talk about it. We'll do like a dedicated thing for it. But if
Yes.
I get started, I won't shut up and
I
this is gonna
know.
develop into something else. So I'm
I
not gonna
know.
mention it. But yeah, watching him be in that position was like really like
Heartbreaking,
depressing,
painful.
yeah. Because it's like
Yeah.
he's also just like a kid, right?
He
And
is. He is.
he's in a position where he's like he's got nobody, save for his uncle, and his uncle's a piece of work, and that's putting it mildly. And even then, Bellows doesn't really seem to care about Hunter as a person. It's just kind of out to get what he can from Hunter, and so it's like for whatever relationship Hunter thinks he has with Bellows, Bellows doesn't view it their dynamic the same way. So like
No,
that's kind of depressing to see too.
it
So when
is.
we get to like this episode, it's Ida, King, and Amity at Eclipse Lake, and then Hunter is there too because he's trying to, get Titan's blood for Bellows and prove his worth and prove that he knows what he's doing and he can be the golden guard. And then to make matters worse, Kikimora is also there. She's like a little pesky bug that just keeps popping up where
Where
you
she's
least
not
suspect it.
wanted. Shut
Yeah,
up,
it's like every time you
Kikimora.
thought you killed that bug, pops up again like 10 feet away, but like 2 days later.
Yeah, I know. So
So,
bad.
yeah, just like watching them all kind of like interact was really interesting. Also because I think this is the first time that like Amity isn't on a piece of the action
Oh, yeah.
and she gets to prove how good she is, because like you know she's good and that she's talented and powerful and all of that, but obviously because most of the show is Lucius kind of going off doing her thing
Yep.
and just getting involved in like you know her scheme, usually without Amity, because Amity, you know, not with Lucius, she's doing something that's probably more, I guess, proper, at least in
Yeah, I
Odalia's
know
eyes.
what you mean. Yeah, I know what
You
you
don't get
mean.
to see a lot
Yes.
of Amity kind of just let loose, but this is one of those episodes where she's just like, if you come for my girlfriend,
I
I will
love
kill
that part of her. She's like, I have a girlfriend. If you touch a single hair on her head, I will murder you. Bye. I love that. I
Yeah.
love that about her. She's very
I know.
protective, and I love that about her. It's dumb, but also very sweet. I hate it, and it's dumb. In her own words, I hate it, and it's dumb. Okay. But
Yeah, I
it's
think
very
maybe you could
sweet.
also read deeper into that, but we'll save that conversation for later.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was just, it was really nice to see like Amity kind of get her moment in like the action and just to see her kick butt and like
Oh my
do
God.
her
Her
thing.
fight against Hunter. Oh my God. That animation, though, is so cool.
Yeah.
Like, we get to find out more information about the Titan and Titan's blood, because dude, they are inside or living on in the body of the Titan. And it's so interesting to find out that they're inside the vein of a Titan. And it's so magically potent that any magic bounces off of it. It doesn't hurt the Titan at all. It just comes back at you. How crazy is that? It's so cool to see. But then it's also like to find out the Titan's blood is what you need to power the portal as such. And Amity figures out that there's blood in the key. And she has the key because Luz tried to eat it in her delirium and she took it to keep it safe. But again, I love the moment between Amity and Hunter because they were in abusive, she used to be in an abusive situation, or she still is, but she's found an outlet, a positive outlet, or people that actually do care for her. But Hunter is still in that situation, that abusive situation. And I love how she says, you know, not everyone's going to think of you this way. You just need to meet the right people who think that you're still worth something regardless of what you do. I love how she said it. And I think Hunter wanted to believe that. But the minute he saw that key, he snapped. And it kind of reminds me of another moment. And if I start talking about that, I'm not gonna stop. So you and I both know what that's gonna be
Yes.
like for us. Okay, so
Yes.
like you said, when we get to a dedicated topic for that, we are going to discuss it. But you know that moment where you're so close
It's
to
like a
convincing this
survival thing.
character that it's okay, that things are going to be okay, but then that illusion shatters and you know that they're going to do something bad. You know, it's like so
Yeah.
frustrating. It
No, I think
hurts.
For Hunter, it's very much a survival thing, right?
Oh,
Because he's
yeah,
like at
for
this
sure.
point where he has to prove
It
himself to
was even
Belos.
for the other
And
character that we were talking about. I went, come
yeah,
on.
I mean, yeah, even in that case, it was very much a survival thing of like, I'm only as good as what I can deliver. And if I don't
Yeah.
prove I'm worth having around, and if there's no use for me, then I
Yeah.
die and I don't want to die. And so I
Yes.
think, especially in Hunter's case, it's like you can kind of see that, like, maybe if Amity had been able to just talk to him like a minute longer. her, and if he hadn't seen that key, she might have gotten through to
Gone
him.
through to him,
But the minute
exactly.
he sees the key, he's like,
It's like,
that's my ticket out
that's
of
it.
here. Like, that's all
Yeah,
I need.
that's it. He
And
snaps. Yeah.
it comes to a point where it's like, by the end, Amity has to make a
It's a
really tough
stalemate.
decision.
It's a
Yeah.
stalemate, but
And
then, yeah.
yeah, it's, yeah, it like the end of that episode, oh my God, Eclipse Lake is just, it's
Crazy.
amazing, but it's also just like monumental because of what happened.
Yeah.
Because even though like they're fighting and they're kind of evenly matched in the end,
I
you
love
know,
how
they like,
Hunter's like, you're skilled and I'm tired. If we keep this up, you'll probably win, but we know where to find you and the human. And that's a mean threat, Hunter. Like, see, this is the thing, right? Again, I keep going back to that other series because they do this so well. Because, like, oh God, I think if we discuss this, we will never stop. Because there is this. Oh, Catra, Catra, Catra. There is a moment, okay, when Scorpia, or even when Scorpia's talking to Catra, she's like, I've never seen you this happy. It's okay to let this go. But then that illusion shatters, and then Catra's like, I'm done. I want this. And that's what happens with Hunter here. If it was just, like you said, even if it was for a minute longer, like a minute, and if he had not seen that necklace, he would have been okay. He would not
Yeah,
have
I think,
snapped.
especially in Hunter's case, I think there it would have been a lot easier if he had,
Oh
if
yeah.
Amity had had a minute more of time to convince him
Yeah.
to like join their cause and maybe just, you know,
Let this
ignore
go,
Bellows. And
start
yeah,
fresh kind
in
of thing.
Catra's case, it's a lot more complicated
Oh God,
because
yes. I will
so much
not
of what she
deny
does
that.
is just
I
like,
will not deny
it's
that.
just.
And we're going, oh my God, we have to get into that at some point because there's so much we have
We
to
will. We will,
unpack.
but not right now, because if
Yeah, I
we
know.
start, we're just not going to stop. And then
I
this
know,
is just
that's
going to
true.
become like
I
a
know.
20-year conversation.
I know, I agree with you there. I absolutely agree with you because we have a lot to say on the subject. But yeah, it's like, again, I love how these shows did this, because you can feel that moment. You can feel it. You want this character to do the right thing. You do. And then they do the wrong thing, but you also understand why they did the wrong thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just so hard. It's like, dude, I know you are in a terrible situation and I need you to be okay. But I know it's like when people say that, yes, it's good to help people, but they also need to be ready to accept that help, right? That's
Yeah.
what this is at this point. And I feel terrible for Hunter. I really do, because I feel like he wants to be okay, but he's just not in the right position at this point. So it's like, it's hard. But I also love how tactical Amity is with this. She's like, she gives him the key, but she's crushed it, which means there's Titan blood on her glove. So there is
Yeah,
that.
so
So let's talk
yeah, I
about
mean,
that.
it's a clever thing, right? Because like obviously Hunter makes a good point, and
Yes.
even if he doesn't survive their encounter, like he says, they know where to find Luz, they know where to find Amity, Ida, King. It's not, you know, it's common knowledge, it's not a secret. So getting to them is not a big deal. Anything that happens afterwards, still a giant question mark. But you know, the actual act of like setting troops on Ida's property and like going up against them can very easily be arranged. And I think it's enough for Amity to kind of decide.
Make a split second
It's
decision in that,
yeah, it's a
basically, yeah.
gamble, because giving them the key is like nightmare scenario, because it gives Bellus everything he wants. But doing it the way she did at least ensures that he has. I mean, the key only has a finite amount of blood anyway. Amity breaking it and absorbing some of it in her own glove ensures that Bellows has even less than what he was originally intended to have. So it's not ideal, but given the way everything turned out, it's the best they could manage, and it does give them some Titan blood to work with, which is what they needed to make the portal and, like, all of
Yeah.
that. So there, it does help them to a certain extent too. But yeah, it's a very tactical thing, and on
Yes.
the one hand, it's very impressive that Amity made that call. On the other hand, it's also like, wow, this is very depressing because these are kids and they're making such, like, huge decisions, like, and having to think tactically because they're fighting in an all-out war almost that's disguised as just like a benevolent, like, emperor trying to bring harmony to this land. And it's like Belus is actually planning a lot more sinister than that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, it's like, again, the more you learn about Belos, the more you understand that this is not a good person. He's just a messed up dude. Oh my God. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, let's talk, and now this leads to something more important because Luz has been getting more and more desperate to talk to her mother, explain to her mother, explain to her mother what this where she's been and what's been going on, which is when we get to this mirror-like dimension because they made this makeshift portal with the bit of Titan's blood that they've got. So let's talk about that because there's a lot going on here and there's a lot of clues that we get from this mirror dimension. As well. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing we find out in this episode is that Luz actually, I think it's one of the question marks probably that as viewers we kind of have when we watch the show, that it's like, okay, Luz has a mom, and all this time her mom hasn't tried to, like, contact her. There's no sort of, I mean, like, we know in the
Yeah.
beginning there was attempts and stuff, and then Luz decided to stay in the Boiling Isles, but past that, it doesn't seem like there's been any effort on Camilla's part to, reach loose. But in this episode, we get, like, this kind of almost bombshell reveal that
Oh
it's
God,
like
yeah.
Camilla is not contacting loose because to
She thinks
her,
Luz is right
loose
with
is
her.
home.
Yeah.
And then it's like,
Yeah.
well, and who's that loose? Where did she come from? Like, what's going on with that? And then we, that ends up being a really kind of bittersweet story too, because Earth Luz, who's posing as real Luz, is not Luz. Her name is V, and she was,
A basilisk, a creature from the Boiling Isles, yeah.
And unfortunately for V, she was tortured and experimented on by the Emperor's Coven, so not at all great scenario to be
Oh,
in. And
definitely not.
the amount of suffering she must have endured is kind of crazy to think about. But she saw a chance to kind of escape that, and she took it.
Yep.
And she had heard of Luz, knew what Luz was doing in the Boiling Isles, and decided, well, if she's there, I can just take over her thing here, and nobody will
And
be,
she's a
like,
shapeshifter, so yeah, she could. That's what she did. Yeah.
So for Camilla, it's like Luz has been with her the whole time. She has no idea that V is V and not her daughter. But she's just like, she's kind of just like, yeah, whatever. Like, because she doesn't know what to look for, right? Like, she doesn't know that there are signs there that Luz is not really her daughter, but
Yep.
she's just like, okay, my daughter's here, everything's great. Luz,
Everything's fine.
meanwhile, is very much aware that, like, there's somebody posing as her, and initially there's kind of like a face off, and then once V explains her predicament, it's a really sweet episode where,
They
like, they end
reach
up
an
working together.
understanding, sort of. Yeah, exactly.
And, like, Luz helps her, and I don't know, I just find that very wholesome and very
Yeah, I
sweet,
want to
so.
talk about that because we find out some clues about Gravesfield, which is the town Luz is from. Like, it's really interesting how they see statues of the founders of the town, and they look incredibly like Philip and someone else in there. Which is kind of interesting, and we'll get to that because there's a lot tying this together as well. There's a lot of common imagery, like the imagery of the symbol for the Emperor's Coven and all those things. They meet this creepy guy at the Gravesfield Library who's trying to capture these demons, trying to think that there's some conspiracy theory going on. Let's talk about all of that, and let's talk about how Camilla finally finds out what's going on with Boots, because that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the whole bit of like Luth and V working together, and then like them, like you said, like reaching an understanding and then deciding that like the best course of action is for both of them to kind of be where they are and help each other kind of accomplish their own goals. But yeah, I mean, Luz has to, in order to help V, she has to reach out to her mom because V gets discovered. And that's a huge ordeal. But yeah, like reaching out to her mom and like having her mom help her and kind of having to explain where she's been, what she's been doing, why she hasn't been home, and kind of like basically just spill the beans is a big deal
Yeah, it
and
is.
not an easy conversation to have.
Oh, definitely not. And this goes back to the very first episode as well, because I think this is when you kind of see what Camilla was trying to do. Because Camilla wanted to help her daughter overcome what she thought was difficulty in meeting new people, making friends, and stuff like that. But then when she learns about this, she's like, "You chose to stay there? Did you hate living with me that much that you ran away?" And I love how she, in the end, she's like, "I'll do better. Just come back to me. If you get a chance, come back to me. I will do better." And it's so heartbreaking because, yes, they get V out of that predicament, but it's also sad because Luz can't be there, and Luz has no way of coming back just yet. There's no way for her to reach Camilla or the human realm at this point. What did you think of that? Because it kind of made me really, really sad.
Yeah, no, it is kind of depressing to think about it. But she was like, "I'll do better." It's like, no, you're fine. It's just other things are getting in the way that are preventing her return. Not so much you.
Yeah, and Lou says that she's like, "It was never you. It's not that I didn't want to come back. It's just things just happened and I couldn't come back, and I'm sorry, but I'm gonna." And Camilla kind of makes a promise that she will come back, and Luz does, but it's kind of like a difficult situation for both of them, and it's kind of hard to see and it's hard to watch. And it's, oh my God, I think it's hard because this is when things come to a head for these two, but then there's more going on in the Boiling Isles which prevent Luz from coming back, and we're going to talk about that in the next episode, because guys, we cannot cover everything that happens in season two in one episode. There's so much going on, and quite honestly, we really thank each and every one of you if you stuck with us up until now to hear us raven rant about this stuff. And like we said, we'll be back next week with part two of season two of The Alhas. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. As always, our lovely theme song is Water Lily by the 126ers. The Nerdy Podcast is available on Anchor, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and you can follow us online at nerdy-podcasts.tumblr.com or at nerdypodcasts.wordpress.com.